I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, features editor at Billboard and Broadway expert here. So it's this rare kind of lightning in a bottle thing when a musical can bring together a composer and a few actors in the kind of collaboration that really changes the lives of all involved going forward. But it has happened for some of the most memorable contemporary musicals. There was Jonathan Larson with Anthony Rapp and Adam Pascal for Rent, Stephen Schwartz for Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth for Wicked, Duncan Sheik for Lea Michele and Jonathan Groff for Spring Awakening. And off-Broadway, one show comes to mind for me above all others that fits this bill: Jason Robert Brown's The Last 5 Years, the intimate two-person musical following the dissolution of a relationship between actress Kathy and writer Jamie, starring respectively Sherry Renee Scott and Norbert Leo Butz. Sherry and Norbert are now two of the most beloved actors in the musical theater world. Sherry notably was the writer and star of her own Tony-nominated show Everyday Rapture after having performed big roles in shows like Aida and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Norbert was the original Fiero in Wicked, and he has won 2 Tonys for his performances in Catch Me If You Can and also Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which he starred in alongside Sherry. But back in 2001, when The Last 5 Years premiered, they were two rising actors diving into an unprecedentedly emotional project together. Cut to today, and Sherry and Norbert are still close friends and close creative collaborators, which will be on full display in their upcoming show, Two-Hander, which is happening at the New York Cabaret venue 54 Below. Two-Hander is a show they conceived together and which Sherry wrote, blending story and song to explore the relationship they have forged over the past 23 years, and which this week I was lucky enough to observe in person. They are truly two of the most versatile and just plain funny performers I've ever seen, so I was thrilled to learn that they are even more delightful offstage, if possible, when they came by the podcast this week.
Share your life with me forever. For the next 10 lifetimes,
Well, as I was just saying, you're two of my favorite people. I'm so excited to have you here and excited to see your show, which I haven't seen yet. And I feel like I just want to sit and talk to you about the last 17 years, I guess. That's going to keep coming.
No, the jokes keep coming.
But I feel like we should start at the beginning. And I would love to know, when did you two first encounter each other in the theater world in the first place?
I first set eyes on this remarkable creature next to me in 1997.
Build them a picture of, on with
your words. In 1997, I was in the alley at the Nederlander Theater in costume in my current job as Squeegee Man Sunday Night Roger in Rent. Whoa. I played Roger on Sunday nights for Adam Pascal, and I at first I was what they call a standby, and then I graduated after a few months into the ensemble, and I took over as squeegee man and still played Sunday Night Roger. And about then is when Idina Menzel left the show, and we heard a replacement was coming in for Idina, and I went out to the alley. I would sneak cigarettes between scenes out there. I was young and still able to smoke and sing, and like I said, this exotic creature was just sort of standing there. She was wearing black leather pants. She had on a super cool white t-shirt. I think she was wearing sunglasses, but it was night.
It was my costume.
And she was not in costume. She was there observing the show because she was having her put in a few days. So she was deep into her rehearsals. And we became friends. And like I said, Sherry and I both were replacements in Rent. And I mean, if I could put it into context, I mean, imagine like the first people that took over in Hamilton or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so there was a rabid fan base. And,
yeah, there were like people like slept on the sidewalk. People slept on the sidewalk. I'm eating a salad while I'm doing this. So people slept on the sidewalk at night to get tickets. It was like that kind of weird.
Yeah, they were rabid fans, and they were sometimes not thrilled when the replacements would be going on.
Most times. So,
most times, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were in the Outcast Club a little bit.
We were a little bit. We were the second Rent second stringers, and I think we got to be good friends during that period. But Sherry did a short stint in Rent. She came in and she took over for Idina for like 6 months.
Six months.
My Lord.
Mm-hmm. I've got to eat. Oh, yeah. It's a long day.
She's also working a hacky sack with both feet. It's incredible. And she's having her nails did all at the same time.
I'm doing yours.
So we became friends. And then 2 years after that, we were offered the last 5 years together off Broadway. And that's when we really went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Well, I first saw him. I didn't know he was in costume. I just thought he was a gay street urchin. And so as every musical theater woman knows, like you immediately talk to the gay guy because you don't want people to think that you're, you know.
Right.
Which is something that we deal with in the show in the male-female work environment. But honestly, the way he worked was really great. And I loved it when he went on. He seemed to understand what I was at least attempting to do with the role. So I think in a lot of ways we had similar sensibilities and senses of humor, and again, we're friendly, you know, like no more friendly than necessarily other people. But I think there was an element of respect for each other's work that was really a strong thing.
It's also so funny to think of a time when people would be disappointed by the idea of you two in Rent. Today, I'm like, that would have been awesome to see. Like when mm-hmm. I look back at like the replacement cast, it's like so many amazing people mm-hmm. who have done it over the years. But I can imagine.
Can I tell?
Please. I don't know what you're talking about.
Because it's no longer in the show, so I can. This used to be.
Oh, yeah. The show. Oh, the true stuff.
Well, yeah. I remember when I would go on all the time, not just for Adam Pascal, but I went on for Anthony Rapp as well. They were both dealing with really difficult things in their private life.
And so on the same day.
I would do like Roger in the afternoon and Mark at night, and then Mark the next day, and then Roger for 2 days, and then Squeegee Man for 3 days. And they called me the Lon Chaney of Rent. I kind of played a lot of different roles.
Sorry, keep going.
That was Sherry's phone.
I'm answering service while I'm eating a salad. And,
I remember coming up to the theater one day. I was walking up to the Niederlander, and I just found out about 20 minutes before I would be going on. It's about an hour before the show, and there were a big group of like 12 to 15-year-old girls, a big mob of them, and I heard one of them go, "Not Norbert, Norbert's on!" And I heard a chorus of girls go, and they were weeping and gnashing their teeth.
And the one line that you always said, like they were screaming like, oh, no, he has a face for radio.
Yeah, I was the like shorter, screaming.
That's
older.
A thing people say in real life.
Yes.
They could be, you know, they could be.
Teenage girls say it loudly on 41st Street.
And then there were, because each cast member had their group behind them. Do you know what I mean?
That yeah,
were
like, totally,
that
totally.
Were their gatekeepers. So there was a really rabid Idina Menzel fan club, as there should be.
Yeah, there should be.
When Sherry would come on and did her first monologue as Maureen, they had the first two seats they would buy out. Half of them would rise en masse and walk out of the theater in the middle of her number.
Usually at the beginning as soon as they saw me enter the stage.
That's aggressive behavior.
The rent heads were real tough on
us. Yeah. It's a show about love and understanding, and like the audience would just get up and leave, like,
and rejection.
And
Seasons of Love was sometimes Seasons of Hell. You know what I mean? Anyway, we have had
a great time, a lot of humiliating memories. Yeah.
A lot of humiliation bonded us.
And
we continue to humiliate ourselves.
Now we're doing it, but we're in control of it.
23 years.
Well, that's like, it's so funny to think of too, because I think when you went into the last 5 years, everything since then, it's almost like other people have been held to that standard.
And yeah.
I think that's interesting. You guys have been the Adam and Anthony and Adina of the last 5 years.
You know, there's something to be said about original cast members, especially in the imagination of the kids and, well, the people who listen. Sherry, her record label, Shikaboom, that she co-owned, actually produced the last 5 years. It was your company's first record, right?
Mm-hmm. First cast album.
Mm-hmm. And even the show didn't have a long life. That record, that cast album has gone on to be, you know, really legendary. It's actually been the best marketing tool that show ever had.
People wouldn't know about that show unless there was a cast. It's a testament to what cast albums do, the best calling cards for shows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I feel like something interesting I've learned over the years of being in the theater world is the fact that sort of it seemed counterintuitive to me at first that sometimes the shows that run the shortest benefit the most from having a cast album, and it's not just like giant show, have a cast album, everything works out. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there have been some other shows recently that come to mind that have benefited from that too. But so when the last 5 years came along, was it Jason who brought you two together in the first place, or how did you guys both come on, and why were you convinced that it was worth investing your time in?
Well, I mean, they had done an out-of-town production in Chicago, I believe.
Yep.
And the person playing the role, what's the name of
Lauren Kennedy.
Kathy, the character. So the person who'd been playing Kathy, because I always say Jamie throughout the whole show, so I don't even know my character's name.
Yeah, we did it in Skokie at New Light Theater, and the show was on hiatus for a while. They wanted to transfer it, but they didn't quite know when. Jason had some legal things to work through, and we lost Lauren. She got an amazing job at the National Theater in London. And so they put the feelers out.
I was
called after a couple weeks of casting and said, Sherry Scott's going to be playing Kathy. And I remembered being thrilled.
Mm.
Absolutely thrilled. I had become such a fan of what she did in Rent. And
both of us had done other things in between. I think you were nominated for a Tony, weren't you? Wait, before that? Whatever. That doesn't matter. I'm a proud three-time Tony loser. That's how I think of myself. I heard the tape of it in Chicago, and they asked me to listen to the tape, and as you get older and old, you have those moments in life, those kind of, for me, they're visual, and you can see yourself, you know, sitting on your bed with a cassette tape and hearing the first songs and hearing Norbert sing, whose voice I still just love. And I just think it's the best musical theater voice. It's like a guy voice that is still like just the most amazing sound, whatever. But it's like, and I had that feeling of that I had never had as an actor before. Like this may be beyond my current capabilities, you know, to sing in this way. I will have to kind of really because it's a certain type of singing that Jason wanted, and I love rock or jazz, so I would have to put in a lot of effort and time to sing this way. But it felt like that feeling, there's nobody on the planet at this time that is supposed to do this but me. It was a really strong, strong, strong feeling. And most of that was because that Norbert was doing it. And I knew that if he was doing it, then my work would rise to another level. And I think that's the honest to God truth. And because I knew it was a beast, you know. And I knew it was very special. And it was. It was a special time for both of us. And honestly, that's why we never sang anything from the show together since the last show until this show, until a benefit for his sister, honestly, in November, which was the impetus which got us, which moved us towards writing and creating this show. So it was so special that I couldn't even bear singing the material with anybody else, one, but two, like with him. So this is the first time we're singing the material from that show, from that really special time.
I was different for me. It's taken me.
It always is.
I knew when I was first cast for the Out of Town, I didn't know Jason well at all. And he asked me to come over to his apartment, and then he actually played me the first song that Jamie sang. No, not the first one. He started to play me a song called Nobody Needs to Know. And he was playing it for me, and I'm in his apartment. I don't know the man at all. And I said, excuse me, I have to use your bathroom. And I went into his bathroom, and I had to put a hand over my mouth. I was starting to sob. It wasn't a lot longer after that, sort of during that, my marriage was falling apart. And so it was this really weird time where I was doing this musical that people were really responding to about the failure of a marriage. And there was something really wrong in my own. And so the show for me was always actually really, it was definitely therapeutic. But I'm so thrilled that it's had the life it's had, and it's given so many people these great parts. But I couldn't listen to a word of it or even hear about it for years and years and years. For me, it was a source of pride. I knew it was a good show, but it was like, no, thank you.
I did the cast. I was one of the producers of the cast album, and I didn't listen to it until maybe a year or two ago.
Yeah, it just didn't. Mm-hmm. It always made me feel sad. It always reminded me of a time that that was like, you know, my work and my life were just bizarrely echoing each other. So it's great now to have, you know, all this time go by and for us to revisit the material after this 23-year friendship. You know, we both have teenage kids now. We have been through everything life that life makes adult people go through, you know, love and loss and
marriages, record labels.
Marriages, on and on, and lots of stuff. And so now I feel it's this weird thing. I'm just thinking of this now. I feel like I just doing this show with Sherry, I understand the last 5 years. Like I could not possibly, when I was 30, have known how to act those songs. And so in the context of our most little weird show that we're doing, I'm acting them better than I've ever acted them. I finally get them. It's like, who's the actress who said, you know, you can't play Juliet in Romeo and Juliet until you're 50 because you can't possibly understand it, you know, but the character is supposed to be 14. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like that. It's like, oh, wow, I finally get what this young guy's going through. I wish I could scream at my younger self, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, but...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was curious. I mean, I feel like you have to discover so much about each other when you're working on such a emotionally intense show and in such a sort of intimate environment with the composer as well. And I could only imagine how amazing it is to hear Jason perform his own music like that.
Right.
He's one of the composers who actually is really great at performing his own songs,
exactly.
I think. But... you know, when I think of the two of you and your strengths, like, I think you have a lot of the same strengths. Like, you know, I think of you two as being amazing at, like, big, flashy roles, that you have, you know, such a great ability both vocally and acting-wise to, like, really be a character. Like, do you feel like you balance each other in certain ways that maybe aren't obvious? Or is it more that you take a very similar approach to things that, that jibes well?
I think that I, it's an inside out job, you know, so it's hard to talk about like a connection that feels like it was always just kind of there. But I think it has a lot to do with the sensibilities of the same sense of humor, or, mm-hmm. you know, both being from the Midwest, and maybe there's like a shortcut language that we have for things, and loving music. We love music. You know, so
religious
there's
upbringings.
Religious upbringings. But then, you know, I'm just starting to discover, you know, writing this and having to create two characters that are, you know, opposed, like, you know, have to have conflict, you know, to make this, to theatricalize this story. You know, like Norbert is the more, you know, he hears stuff, you know, really clearly. The sound of stuff is really important to him. And I love music too, but he, you know, I would be more of a visual person. You know what I mean? It's like so maybe we do balance each other out in that way. And it is the kind of thing of like, if you believe in your scene partner, if you believe in your scene partner, you're just like so happy to serve, you know what I mean? And it becomes serve the material and, you know, serve that person. And he's, you know, there's some reciprocity involved in the relationship. And that's something that we, really, the show is about, the show that we conceived and are doing this July, is it's ultimately, after somebody told us, Dick Scanlon, like, because it's hard to say when you're writing it, conceiving it, and also in it, you haven't seen where it's scary. We were scared because it's very different. And we didn't know. He tried to get out of it many times, and I just kept trusting, and he don't bail on me, and he didn't, and it was either going to be really something unique, and or it was going to be the end for me, like in terms of like no one would ever ask me to write anything again, but it ended up being about a workplace relationship, mm-hmm. and how to negotiate a long term male female dynamic in the workplace. And what happens is all of the stuff that we went through as people it's been crafted in such a way that it doesn't feel any way like therapy. It's funny, it's entertaining. It doesn't feel like it's Norbert and I talking about ourselves. It's this journey of this workplace relationship that you really want to follow and see what happens with them. And that was the goal, like the dream, to like get people that didn't know the last 5 years, you idiots, or like the people that don't know like who we are or don't care about musical theater, like
idiots,
a guy
idiots.
That worked in an insurance office, we keep saying, would like be able to be like, start be engaged very early with the truth of this is like, you know, there's everybody has something they can relate to in this story. And I think that's the great surprising thing is like, mm-hmm. you think it's going to be about these shows these people have done together. And it really has less to do with us, honestly, than it does to do with the journey of these, of a long-term relationship and how you manage that and the male female dynamic and what I like to call sexual tension. I think it's still
here's the thing that we've had to come to terms with, especially in putting this together. Sherry is all woman. I mean, she's all feminine. I don't want to get into a whole thing about gender and fluidity, but she, and I've come to find out relatively late in life, I'm pretty all male.
Yeah. Pretty textbook
sort of like
hetero.
Yes. I don't hate the word hetero.
I know. That's why I keep saying it in all the interviews.
But like, you know, back in the 90s, if they wanted to say something pejorative, we would be called heteronormative, I suppose. But that's we found out that that's been an interesting thing to talk about. It's interesting to talk about because we've done so much work together. So much of the work has been romantic or sexual or even exposed. Physical comedy. Mm-hmm. Physical comedy takes a lot of physical intimacy and, mm-hmm. and trust.
Singing,
and I did not to make you know the overt sexual metaphor, but you asked us how we were different and. You know, I know people will titter, but she slowed me down. She slows me down. I am, as an actor, as a performer, I'm all instinct. I don't like to talk. I don't like to think. I jump right in. I start to use my body right away. I don't think about visuals. I don't think about all those things. She, as an acting partner, she, and I knew this right away, she slows me down. She tends not to react to something if you haven't really done it. You can't. And I do, I'm wary of doing, you know, generalization, gender things, but I do, women that I've known a few. I have three daughters, and they do like to sort of they're relational by nature. That's what I have found out. Relationships, the connectivity mm-hmm. between people is of great value of slowing down and making sure that they are being heard, that they are being that they are allowed space to. For whoever they are, and so it was a matter of slowing down, and she still does it. I'd be like, it's good enough. Let's go. I'm like that. She's constantly putting on my brakes, going, I think it can be better.
Yeah.
And it's not just about good and better. Is there more?
B12 deficiency, maybe.
More to talk about? Is there something, you know? Mm-hmm. I just can't help but find the metaphor in my life. You know, my daughters are now telling me that. My wife is telling me that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That could just be my metabolism. I'm pretty bad, but I think it's also sort of like
we're doing classic, optimist, pessimist, you know what I mean? Dreamer, realist, you know, we set up our relationship, we pare it down to the bare minimum for the humor. There's a part that's true to that. And within them, whatever you want, male, female, or masculine, feminine, it's interesting when he's saying that because, you know, this is what Norbert's come to now. And the hard part for Norbert was when, you know, writing from beginning to ending. And Norbert at the beginning of the show is not this Norbert who can talk about this now, is not somebody who was aware of how very male he was. And that I had to just be like, trust me, you're going to be like cool, enlightened, like, dude, at the end, I promise, because we need a actual like enlightened or at least like male figure.
And again, I am not enlightened. She wrote a character who is enlightened by the end of her play.
But yes. But this is we are in a time of having difficult dialogues and inventing words for things that have never had words before. And I think we don't want to live in a world where people don't meet and fall in love at work. God knows I would never date again if I didn't meet somebody from work. That's the only place I meet people. But how can we like do this in a more with a higher consciousness and awareness that we have now? And I think you kind of watch this relationship go through that journey, and it's still an ongoing dialogue as we're doing this piece and other things come up where now I'm giving him, I have to go into my find my masculine and say, this is what I'd like you to read, you know, today. And no, I think we're keeping that line. You know, it's really difficult but I think it's been kind of amazing. It's been really, really, really great, but it was really very, very scary, I have to say. Like, mm-hmm. Because we thought you don't know, people don't realize that when you're doing a show, you don't know what you have. You're in it. You can know what it feels like.
And I just don't want to be arrested, you know.
Yeah, again.
At the curtain call.
Again. Wait, again. Did we tell the story of how you got arrested?
No,
what?
No, no,
yeah, I was like,
no.
Sorry, I thought we already did it.
I talk about my rap sheet every time we do an interview. I can't.
Well, another.
I can't anymore.
Well, because this is, no, well, not all of the arrests, just this one. But like in terms of like story, like there's so much life that you can't like put in, like, and you want to craft it to make it theatrical. But one of the stories that we didn't put in from the last 5 years, you know, is you tell it. Like, there's before the time of phones, and there's two people in the cast, keep in mind, and
I
two
was driving, I live in New
shaking
Jersey.
In their boots understudies who have never gone on, and we're like, you'll never go on ever.
So about 2 months into the run, I was driving in from New Jersey for a matinee, and there was a terrible traffic jam, and I had to go to the bathroom, just number one. And I was somewhere off the New Jersey Turnpike. And after not moving for like 40 minutes and having no receptacle in the car, I just popped out really quick and went under this viaduct. And I had to do what I had to do. Unfortunately, a cop car pulled up right when I was doing that. And I was given a summons for urinating in public and indecent exposure.
What? And, it's fairly decent, I should say.
All right.
Wow.
Sorry, that's a good one for me.
That's really good. And so I was desperately trying to get messages to the theater. The understudy did go on. I got through the traffic jam. I took my ticket and I got to the theater. Unfortunately, they were just finishing up.
And he did get a message to the theater, because now I remember, like, the director, Dave, he must have called, like, because that was beside a payphone. He pulled over and went to a payphone, and Daisy came back and was like,
wait, was it 1970? There was probably, I had a pager or something.
We didn't know for hours.
It was just the big ones.
And I, like, went off during one of my numbers and my understudies on stage singing and sweating, and Daisy, the director, was like, he's fine, Norbert. He was arrested for public urination.
And no one blinked. No one even, like, people shrugged, like, yeah. What's new?
But it was, those were the days.
This seems you've just theatrically acted it out. I think it should be in the show.
Yeah.
It's not like a show story type of show,
but it's a relationship, but I mean, it's an adult show, like, not like porn, but it's like, it's a funny.
That should be the tagline. Yeah. It's an adult show, just
not like porn.
Parenthetically.
Yeah. Just porn-ish.
Well, I mean, I have to imagine that it's nice for you, full circle wise, to come back to this two-hander environment. And, you know, the two of you have been in so many very big, splashy, like, classic Broadway shows. And this is the kind of project that I would think kind of makes you come back down to earth and, like, you know, maybe realize what you want to do next or what you're looking for from the work that you're doing. I mean, does it change? Does being in this environment together after all of these years and working through this kind of stuff change how you look at, you know, like, what you want to be doing going forward?
That's really interesting.
That's a really great question. And it really, really has. And I'm 52. And what's happened to me anyway, you know, I've done a lot of shows and I've done a lot of shows that didn't work. And I sort of do want to find things that I don't know. I'm an actor and I'm a singer. I want to continue to do that. I don't know that, like, the typical Broadway track of, you know, find the big brand or the big film and then, you know, get the, you know, take it out of town and then, you know, come on and, you know, your bodies go through hell and your voice goes through hell and it's hard to make any money and all of it. This does feel more like the stuff, at least right now, that I want to be doing, stuff that I can really, really invest in, really have some creative control over. Fewer people in the room feels really good to me. Smaller canvas feels really good to me. So,
yeah, it's like they say, like, 1,500 people, sure, I can perform in front of, but, you know, 40 or like 197.
Yeah, it's harder.
Like, it's
in a way.
Like a little, it's, and the show is really dealing with intimacy issues and the idea of forced intimacy. And then as actors, we're dealing with it on stage with our vulnerabilities, with the audience in time. And so I do it. I think my problem probably is that I've always wanted to do work from the same place, you know, inside myself, which is why no one knows who I am and I hardly ever work. So that's really gotten me far. But I do think that
she's also become a playwright in the past.
I was going to say, I feel like you have like a show you wrote that shows who you were pretty well.
I keep on schlepping and schlepping at this acting thing because I actually, that's a comfortable spot for me. I like having a mask. I like having a story. And she's been working on work that's coming from deep within Sherry, frankly.
Well, yeah, I always felt like a writer masquerading as a singer and an actor. And I think that Norbert is a born, there are very few of these people, you know. He's a born actor, and in the best sense of the word, where acting is telling the truth. And he's incredibly talented. He dances, he sings, does all these. But I mean, also,
not again.
And then but I'm saying, this is like, you know, you do have to believe in what you're doing.
Yes.
I do. I have to.
Yes.
And you have to, even if you're kidding yourself, like, even if, like, oh, this show's going to be about, you know, how awful homophobia is and Islamophobia and like, it sucks, but you ended up, you did it because you really believed in it politically. Wait.
Oh, that's not what our show's.
No, our show's not. I mean, it can be. yeah, don't use that as the line. It's about, but, and then you can also believe in the people that you're working with, you know, and know that they're, you know, going to raise your level and raise your bar. And so, yeah, writing and being with people that I love, being with people that I really like and people that are nice and kind and smart ends up being more important than a lot of things in life. You know, so yeah, I always chose in the same way. I think now I just have an option of, if I don't know a really great guy, I'll just write one. So
I mean,
yeah. It's like, yeah. So there's just, it's not easy being like a divorced mom, single in the city, and, you know, at this age and trying to, like, redefine myself or be taken seriously, like, especially when I don't take myself seriously, but it's like, it's, yeah, it's really hard to, which is why this is important that this, like, was at least understood on some level, if not going over well, but this show, but I mean, it's done both, but I said, I wouldn't have written what I wrote had I not known that I have a person be like, oh, stand on your head and sing a D flat. I think he could do that. So if I put that in there, he could probably do that. So you just can think anything you want in the world. Because
I'm going to try it right now.
Yeah.
1 second, please, while I take off my shoes.
He is doing it. Okay, that looks good.
Yeah.
Oh, wrong end.
Wow.
Boom. And commercial break.
Yes. Well, I know that, I mean, you're both the kind of performers that whenever one mentions your names, everybody immediately wants to know what you're doing next and is hoping there's another show coming soon. So I think that there's a lot of love out there for you and excitement for the show.
Oh, good.
And I'm excited to see it now, and I hope that Norbert doesn't get arrested.
Oh, I hope he does.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Please.
Fingers crossed. I've been on a
roll.
Just
one more time.
I've been on a roll. It's been a few years now since my
last. Yeah.
Excellent. Keep it going.
All right.
Keep it going.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Two-Hander, starring Shari Renee Scott and Norbert Leo Butz, is playing at 54 Below in New York, July 9th through 28th. You can go to 54below.com to get tickets. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, please subscribe and leave nice reviews and some stars on iTunes. You can also find the podcast on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, among other platforms. If you want to talk about your love of the podcast on social media, I'm at Rebecca Milzoff on Twitter and at YaDownWithRMM on Instagram. You can always use hashtag Billboard on Broadway to talk about the podcast. We will be having a little July 4th holiday next week, so enjoy the time off that I hope you have, and we'll have you back on the podcast soon. Blah, blah, blah.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.